Every year is a good year for jazz. Whether it's the Duke or Ella or someone newer to the scene, you'll find all your jazz favorites on A Good Year for Jazz with your host, Nathan. Each week, travel the calendar back to 1945, 59, or even 2015 to hear what was happening in the world of jazz. I'll meet you right here Monday night, 7 to 9, on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. The holidays are traditionally a time when we gather together with our friends and family and indulge in some excellent meals. And during the holidays, as for every other occasion in life, from birth to death, there's a role for beer to play. Later in the show, I'll be talking about the various styles of beer that are traditionally offered at around this time of year. But in this segment, I want to focus on selecting beers which will pair well with traditional holiday foods. So let's talk about some beer styles which pair well with the traditional holiday meal of roast turkey and all the trimmings. First up, there are Oktoberfest beers. Characteristic of the season, fest beers pair nicely with a wide variety of snacks and starters, including roasted and salted nuts and pumpkin seeds, as well as fresh, mild, or sweet cheeses. This earthy, imperial style easily carries over into the rest of the meal. You'll find the understated but interesting flavor profile pairs well with almost any course. Next, consider a saison or farmhouse ale. These bright, spicy, and crisp golden-hued beers are champagne-like in their effervescence and perfect for the season. With hints of citrus peel and ginger, farmhouse ales and saisons have a firm balance of bitter and sweet. They pair nicely with salty or seed-covered crackers served with strong, funky cheeses, light salads as a first course, and seasonal fall desserts. As part of a main course accompaniment featuring roast chicken or turkey, you'll find the subtle complexities of this style worth journeying through a meal with. Also from Belgium are the Golden Strong Ales. These light-colored golden ales are perfectly suited for a first course that includes a bright salad highlighting fresh green apple, dried cranberries, and a poppy seed vinaigrette. With its added sugars, Belgian-style Golden Strong Ale is bubbly, sweet, and has a spicy Belgian yeast character with subtle notes of banana and clove. Serve it as a dessert course between bites of apple or cherry pie, or offer it to those who typically choose a Chardonnay to go with their dinner. They will appreciate this beer throughout the meal. Beer brewed with rye also deserves serious holiday consideration. Rye beers have a malty sweetness and a rich rye color, along with a spicy and delightful bitter citrusy bite that makes a good first course selection with strong cheese and salty snacks, like those on a traditional charcuterie board. It also stands up nicely to the Thanksgiving plate without getting lost amid rich and savory flavors typical of the meal. Gravy-laden plates with bread stuffing and roasted garlic mash are ideal pairings for a Belgian-style quadruple, an earthy, complex, and malt-forward beer. Equally interesting as a dessert pairing with caramel or molasses-forward desserts like pecan pie or sweet potato casserole, this brew is one to savor from the main course through the end of the meal. Strongly smelling of caramelized banana with a spicy clove flavor that becomes more noticeable as it warms, an Imperial Weizenbock is almost a dessert in itself. Pouring a rich, dark honey or caramel color, it's ideally served with banana bread pudding and vanilla ice cream, or alongside creme brulee, or as a carbonated counterweight to classic New Orleans dessert Bananas Foster with some cinnamon spice whipped cream. This beer is a unique and intriguing way to finish a meal. Imperial stouts have a deep roastiness balanced by chocolatey bitterness and hints of anise. Serve this style alone or as an after-dinner treat, or with rich chocolate ice cream, coffee, and cinnamon almond biscotti, or with custard pies like sweet potato and pumpkin for a memorable end to your dinner party. No list of holiday beer pairings would truly be complete without mentioning barley wines. Often aged in bourbon barrels, these rich and raisiny beers are heavy on the malts. Truly meant for sipping, barley wines move over into the booze territory and will likely appeal to fans of caramel and malt-dominated spirits. These thick, decadent beers are desserts in and of themselves, though in Britain they are traditionally paired with aged Stilton cheese. If you find yourself as a guest rather than the host of the holiday meal, may I strongly suggest that instead of the customary bottle of wine, you consider bringing a bottle of beer. A beer from Belgium, or brewed in the Belgian style, packaged in a handsome 750-milliliter cork bottle, makes a wonderful presentation. And if you're a beer lover like me, it also ensures that there will be something decent to drink alongside your meal. Whichever style or style of beers you choose to accompany your holiday meals, I hope you all enjoy the season. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier with your host, Bill Howell, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Next up, we'll have Zach Henry of St. Elias Brewing Company.
Have you ever wondered how much fish we sell on the Kenai, or how much oil comes from here, what it's all worth, and what it all means? Well, we have too. That's why we created Econ 91.9, a weekly look at the Kenai Peninsula's economy, what makes it work, and who makes it work. Tune in each Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. for new numbers, emerging trends, and a bit of trivia. Econ 91.9, Friday mornings at 9 and again at 5, right here on KDLL, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Well, hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and we're here in the brewery at St. Elias Brewing Company talking with our good buddy Zach Henry about some of the latest developments at St. Elias. Zach, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. So first off, let's talk about your new addition out back that everybody who pulls in the parking lot gets a good look at.
Oh, yeah, we're building a larger walk-in cooler. The one that we've got is, it's been too small for, I mean, since we've owned the place pretty much. It's just completely full in the summertime. And so finally we've decided to build a new one, a bigger one, so we don't have that problem in the stock problem in the summertime.
Is it just about finished, or where are you at on it?
We're pretty close to done. We got the cooler fired up, and, yeah, just got to put some siding on the building, and we'll be good to go, I think, after that.
You're not going
to
go with the traditional Tyvek for a decade like everybody else in Alaska?
Probably not. I think the Tyvek will be on there for a week, I think, probably. After Thanksgiving, we'll put the siding on.
Okay. Well, hey, that sounds good. So how about some of your new releases that you've got coming up? You said you've got a lambic ready, right?
Yeah, we did a lambic. I won't call it like a lambic, but it's a lambic style ale because I use the same yeast that the Belgian brewers use, except I order the yeast and dose it into barrels. And I dosed it into a Belgian pale ale about 2 years ago. So it's really gotten pretty sour and pretty funky. And I blended that with another fresher batch of beer. And I added black currants and red currants, and we called that one Ladybug.
So this one that's what you're releasing here soon is black currants and red currants?
Yeah, I just put that on tap actually just a few days ago. Okay. Yeah, but it's a pretty nice blend. It's not too sour. It's got like a really nice fruit character, but it's still got some of that traditional kind of lambic sourness.
Okay. So it's Ladybug, you said?
Yep, Ladybug.
Great. And you said you just brewed a double IPA?
Yeah, we did a double IPA. I went with a little bit of a darker double IPA. When I say darker, I guess it's more like copper instead of my normal, like, super blonde double IPA. But I added Mosaic, Eldorado, and Columbus hops. And, yeah, that should be, I think I'll probably put that out on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving.
Black Friday. So how does it weigh in with alcohol and IBUs?
IBUs, I don't know, because like in the on my Pro Mash system, when I developed the recipe, it says 100. I don't know if it's 100 IBUs, but it's up there for sure, definitely to balance. But it's probably like maybe around 8.5%, I'm thinking, ABV.
So something to treat with respect. So when have you got a name for that one yet?
No, I don't. This is kind of the way it works. I wait till the last minute, and then it's like rush, try to come up with a clever name. But soon enough.
Oh. Okay, so everybody can look for that one. By the time this broadcast, that'll have been yesterday when it went on tap. If you're listening to this, it's already on tap over at St. Elias. Look for the double IPA. Maybe it's going to be TBA double IPA. And you've started doing your pizza of the month again, I see.
Yeah, we've been trying to kind of rotate some pieces just to kind of keep it fun and interesting, and trying to pair it with different beers too, which is kind of fun. But yeah, this month we've got a Thai chicken pizza. We're trying to kind of rotate it and just kind of keep things new. A lot of people are scared to create their own, which, you know, you can build your own pizza here, but a lot of people don't feel qualified to make something really great. So we're kind of taking that out of their hands and coming up with something on our own and selling it.
I tried that a couple of weeks ago, and it's a great pizza. If you like Thai stuff or curry flavors, it's really, really good, and it goes great with, like, your Pilsner. I think that's what I was drinking it with. And you're going to then have something new here in a week when it's the 1st of December?
Yeah, and I've got John Bennett. He runs the show in the kitchen, and I kind of give him rein to come up with different stuff, and he normally comes up with some pretty awesome combinations. So I'm not real sure exactly what the next one is. I probably should be a little more in tune with what's going on out there, but I've been pretty busy between the project and trying to brew and keep up with production.
So let's talk about the really important thing, which is this beer that you and I brewed together back in September of 2017, which we're finally getting ready to release. So you picked a release date, right?
Yeah, it looks like we're settling on the 14th, is that correct, of December? Yeah, we're going to release that on the 14th. Bill came up with this style, historic style, but it's a stockyard ale, correct? That's what they were traditionally called.
Yeah, I think that's what the Brits called them, because they used to, stock was the word that they used to use for aged beer, and the yard part came from the fact that the breweries would put it in a barrel and then leave the barrel in the brewery yard for a year. So that was the idea, and that it was a pale ale that had been aged a long time in the barrel. So we brewed ours in September of last year, and then in January of this year, we moved it to the barrel, right, and yep. Dosed it with Brettanomyces.
Yep.
So we just had a sample, and boy, I think it's tasting pretty dang good. How about you?
Yeah, I like it. The smell is kind of reminiscent of Orval a little bit. But the flavor, definitely the hops are really pronounced. They're traditional English Fuggle and Golding. But it's got a real basic malt profile, so the hops really shine through. And also the Brett shines through really well, because we used Maris Otter as the base, but no specialty malts.
Yeah, so on the 14th, Friday the 14th, we can release it. I think we've decided to call it H&H Barrel Aged Pale. And you said you were going to put some in a cask too, right? Why don't you explain to folks what the difference between a cask ale and one of your more typical ales would be?
Yeah, it's a more traditional English method where you you basically fill a cask and you put a food source, a priming sugar of some kind or fresh wort in there, and then it kicks off another fermentation and naturally carbonates it. And then it's served by, it's not pushed with CO2 like most beers are today. It's actually hand pumped with a beer engine. So the presentation's really nice. It has a really nice kind of a soft, pillowy look. The head does, and the beer's a much softer tasting beer because you don't have the spritz of that, you know, hard carbonation, you know, that kind of can put an edge on a beer. It kind of softens it a bit in the cask.
Yeah, I always enjoy them because I find that the carbonation is finer. It's like it's a little softer, a little finer, a little more complex flavor to it. And obviously, it gives you a chance to use your beer engine that you've got installed on your bar, and that you don't get to use as often as you would probably like, or as I would like. So, the down thing, of course, about cask beers is that they need to be consumed quickly because they don't last once they've been tapped. So if you're interested in trying H&H Barrel Aged Pale on cask, you should probably come in on Friday the 14th or Saturday the 15th, that weekend, and get it, because while the regular version will be available for quite a while, the cask probably won't last more than 2 or 3 days. You should come in and check it out. What else, Zach, what do you got coming down the pike anytime soon, beer-wise, besides that?
Made a porter. I put, just yesterday, I actually put cocoa nibs in there. They're soaking in there. Cocoa nibs are like the actual cocoa beans that are kind of broken up. They're really hard. But as you age them in the beer, they kind of give off some of their flavors. And it's kind of the base of chocolate. I mean, that's where chocolate comes from, the cocoa bean. But it's there's no sugar or anything else that, you know, normally is added into chocolate. It's just the chocolate, the dark chocolate character that you get from those cocoa nibs.
So when do you figure you'll have that one on tap?
I'm hoping probably maybe around the same time, like maybe Friday, or if not this coming Friday, next week sometime.
Great. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us, Zach. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you around.
Sounds good, Bill. Thank you.
All right. This is Bill Howell, Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.no. We'll be right back with our next segment.
This is Chef Steve Horn inviting you to join me for the reopening of the Blues Cafe on Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. We are serving up a menu of new blues, old blues, my favorites, your favorites, and music that just makes you feel good. Make your reservations to join me on Tuesdays opposite the borough meetings for Blues Cafe. Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldatna. In our next segment, we're going to talk about Christmas beers. Now that Thanksgiving is behind us, we are well and truly into the Christmas season. Whatever reservations you might have regarding the current state of the Christmas holiday in America, too commercial, too secular, too religious, too you name it, there's one thing we all should be in agreement on. Christmas beers are wonderful. You might think that beer and Christmas don't really go together, but you'd be very wrong. In fact, folks were brewing and drinking strong fermented drinks to celebrate the winter solstice long before there even was a Christmas. At Stonehenge and other sites, prehistoric peoples worshiped the sun and must have celebrated the solstice, likely with fermented grain. In Rome, at the time of the birth of Christ, the biggest festival of the year was the Saturnalia, held from 17 to 25 December, a time when masters and slaves exchanged roles, gifts were exchanged, and pretty much everyone got rip-roaring drunk. Sound familiar? The Vikings were no slouches either when it came to celebrating at this time of year. Imagine sitting in your dark and smoky Viking longhouse, wondering if this might be the year when spring wouldn't come, heralding Ragnarok and the end of all things. How happy would you be when the days finally stopped getting shorter and started getting longer again? Wouldn't you want to crack open a nice strong ale and celebrate? As Alaskans, we should sympathize. By 800 AD, Norwegian farmers were required by law to brew a strong mule beer using a weight of grain equal to the weight of said farmer and his wife. Since this was before hops were used in brewing, these ales would have been flavored with berries, herbs, and spices. Over the centuries, Christmas and brewing both changed, but the tradition of brewing special strong ales for the holidays continued, and still does in many small traditional breweries in Europe. In America, Prohibition meant the end of Christmas beers, as it meant the end of so many other things. After repeal, some of the restored American breweries released Christmas beers, but most of them were just their standard beers in a differently decorated bottle or can. Christmas beers seemed destined to be relegated to the history books, at least in America. But when all seemed lost, craft brewers stepped up to carry on this proud tradition. Back in 1975, Fritz Maytag, owner of Anchor Brewing in San Francisco, and the man many folks consider the godfather of American craft brewing, decided to brew a Christmas ale. Fritz thought it was time to renew the ancient tradition of brewing something special for the holidays, and Anchor Brewing has done so for every Christmas since. The recipe used to brew their Christmas ale is different every year, though since 1987, the recipe has always included spices. What spices? That's a secret that Anchor keeps to itself, so if you'd like to know, pick up a six-pack and guess with the rest of us. Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, another pioneer of American craft brewing, began releasing a Christmas ale in the late 1980s. Their Celebration Ale is eagerly awaited each year by beer lovers around the world who love to debate the virtues of each year's vintage as compared to the last. Unlike Anchor's Christmas Ale, Celebration Ale is not spiced. Instead, it's an amped-up version of Sierra Nevada's Pale Ale, being stronger, darker, and more hoppy. It's a fantastic beer, perfect for those long, cold winter evenings by the fire, and very widely available. Alaskan Brewing in Juneau produces their very interesting winter ale this time of year, though perhaps it's not strictly a Christmas ale rather than a winter seasonal. It's in the style of an old English ale, malty and strong, but enlivened by the addition of Sitka spruce tips. Using spruce tips in beer has a long history in Alaska and harkens back to those pagan Vikings brewing their Yule ales and flavoring them with what they had at hand. Glacier Brew House in downtown Anchorage is famous for its 12 Days of Barley Wine event. Each December, Glacier offers four different barley wines or imperial stouts each day for 12 days. If you find yourself in Anchorage in mid-December, it's definitely an experience worth checking out. Moving on to our local breweries here on the Kenai Peninsula, Kenai Brewing Company releases its excellent Winter Warlock Old Ale each October 1st. This beer is brewed each October and then cold conditioned for a year, giving it a smooth, mellow flavor that conceals its 9% alcohol by volume. As he mentioned in his interview, Zach Henry of St. Elias Brewing will be releasing a beer on Friday, December 14th, that was well over the year in the making. This barrel-aged pale ale was brewed in September of 2017, then racked to oak barrels in January of this year and dosed with Brettanomyces. After almost a year in the wood, it's a truly unique experience. Cassox Brewery celebrates the season by featuring its vintage barley wines from 2010 to 2018 at its brewery tap room, with a different one offered each week. It will also be releasing its 2018 Chocolate Cherry Stout on December 15th. Whatever you choose to drink during the holidays, do it responsibly and enjoy the time with friends and family. Once again, it's time for Beer Gear. In this month's Beer Gear, I've got a couple of recommendations for you beer lovers out there to put on your Christmas wish lists. The first is a new book by British beer writer Melissa Cole. Back in 2011, she published her first book, the excellent Let Me Tell You About Beer, A Beginner's Guide to All Things Brewed. Her new work is called The Beer Kitchen, The Art and Science of Cooking and Pairing with Beer. Sharing over 70 incredible recipes, Cole expertly guides the reader through the gustatory pleasure of cooking with beer and what to drink with various creations. Starting with the science bits, she explains the importance of taste and flavor, how to assess beer and pair it to perfection. Then she dives into the recipes, which include everything from delicious dips, flatbreads and pickles, to show-off roasts, classic pies, and inventive desserts. Feast on the exquisite beer-brined pork chops with blue cheese polenta, or perhaps prepare the perfect beer-poached chicken for Sunday lunch. For midweek meals, from when you want something hearty but healthy, she offers up creamy celeriac croquettes with hefeweizen sauce, or the lighter but extremely tasty warm kale and nuja salad, or for ultimate indulgence, tuck into the quick chocolate pots with creek-soaked cranberries. With thorough advice on beer types and flavor notes to beer and cheese pairings, plus a helpful guide to tools and equipment and store cupboard essentials, The Beer Kitchen is a new, scientific, and exciting approach to food that will change the way you cook and what you drink with it. It's a 224-page hardback loaded with color photos, and it's available for $19.49 on Amazon. My second suggestion this month is 33books.com. 33 Books Company is Dave Selden's one-man publishing operation based in Portland, Oregon. I've been using Dave's 33 Bottles of Beer booklets to record my beer reviews for over a decade now, but his offerings have expanded dramatically over the years. Now the site offers 27 different tasting journals covering everything from coffee, cheese, and chocolate to cigars, oysters, and salami. 33 Books even offers tasting kits for things like hot sauces and whiskey to help train your palate. If you've got someone in your life who really likes some sort of fine food stuff, there's probably a 33 book for them. Check it all out at 33books.com. Well, that's it for this month's Beer Gear. For our closing quote this month, we go to famous early American author Washington Irving, who said, "Those who drink beer will think beer." And on that note, I hope you all think beer through the holiday season, and we'll see you just before the new year. This is Bill Howell, Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Cheers.